Welcome to the Hockey Writers Union Junction, a weekly show from our Columbus Blue Jackets insider, Mark Scheig, bringing you the latest news, rumors, trades, player grades, game results, and much more. From training camp to the playoffs, from draft day to the trade deadline, he covers everything that happens with the Jackets. So get ready. It's time for another get-together at Union Junction.
Oh, hockey fans, welcome back to Union Junction. January the 13th, 2022, Thursday morning in advance of the game against the Carolina Hurricanes. Remember, it is an ESPN Plus Hulu exclusive. And yes, even if you're in Columbus, you can watch it. I'm your host, Mark, along with Nick. And we have a special guest this week. We're just going to jump right into it because with him, we could talk for hours about the Blue Jackets. So we're grateful that he's taken some time here to kind of help us get reset on where this team is at now and in the immediate future. You know him. He is from The Athletic and the New York Times to a degree now. It's Aaron Portsline. Hi, Porty.
Hello, gentlemen. How are you?
We couldn't be better. We very much appreciate you taking the time to...
Yeah, well, good to be with you.
Absolutely. Where is this team at? I mean, it was a great start, 12-6.
Yeah.
And then they played the worst hockey of the season, which isn't too surprising given what most of the experts thought, but this kind of reset, what has happened as of late that it's been a complete nosedive? And then what do you think are the immediate ramifications of that?
Well, I got to be honest with you. Like it's been a little more helter skelter than I expected, a little more roller coastery, but where they're at on the whole is ahead of where I thought they'd be, and how they played of late is kind of what I think. Maybe that's a little too harsh. I thought they'd struggle this year. They're kind of meant to struggle this year. I mean, I think some people may have missed the memo with the moves last summer that they're not going to bring it down to the wood and you know try to lose games. Jarmo Kekäläinen's never going to do that, but this is a rebuild. That's what this is. And this is a season that's being spent evaluating players, getting some players experience. They're a super young team. And I've felt this way in a few seasons. Help is not on the way. Help cannot be on the way. That's what this is. They're not going to trade any of tomorrow to fix today, because this franchise as of right now is about tomorrow. And so you take your lumps with the young guys and you watch them closely to make sure that it's not overwhelming them. You look at the guys that are kind of the in-betweeners and you decide if they're going to be part of this or not. You hope for some pleasant surprises. And they've had Alexander Texier, it just exploded this year in a way I think they've been waiting for him to do. I think he's a bright spot. I think Andrew Peak is a bright spot. But they're sorting through some stuff. And, you know, this next couple months is going to be hard. Because when you're a team in this situation, these are kind of the dog days. Mm-hmm. And then things start to get interesting in March again. What's going to happen at the trade deadline? Who's going? What are they bringing in? When does Kent Johnson get here from Michigan? Right. When does Kirill Marchenko get here? Does he find his way here late this season? Does he wait till next? What prospects might they acquire at the trade deadline if they move veterans out? Yeah. I think there's some really hard decisions that they're just gathering information on. And not that this group is a sacrificial lamb necessarily, but I think the struggle is real, and I think the struggle was kind of expected, and it's just about enduring this. This is the hard part of a rebuild. The easy thing is to sit in the office one day and decide you're going to do it. It's exciting as hell. What happened last summer was freaking great. The Friday of the draft was amazing.
Yep.
But you're taking a step back in the expectation and the hope that you're taking big steps forward in the future. But this is where it's hard. And we've seen teams, NHL teams, change course. They just can't put up with it. Chicago got to last summer and thought, we can't do this anymore. We're trading first-round draft picks for Seth Jones. Enough of this rebuilding bull crap. Am I allowed to cuss on this podcast? The Rangers bailed on their rebuild. Now, they're a pretty good team. But this is the hard part, and they got to stick with it. And I think with John Davidson here, they will.
So, something that I wanted to ask you about, Aaron, is you mentioned this is kind of a team built for tomorrow. When you look at one of the trouble spots of this team is the defense. And this is, there's a lot of young pieces on that defense. You mentioned Peak, Werenski is still young, Boqvist, Gavrikov still under 25, you know, like these are still young guys. Do you think that everyone kind of there now is here for tomorrow, or like, and those are guys looking to build around, or do you think that maybe one or two of those guys is going to have to come out to get somebody else in there?
Yeah. Well, it's a really good question. And I think that's what this year and future years are about. I mean, it's hard to believe Boqvist. It seems like he's been around for 4 or 5 years. He's only 21 years old, right? Mm-hmm. They're exceedingly young. I think Peak has, you know, the question with Peak is he going to be, can he be your physical guy? Can he, you know, that's what they've clearly sort of steered him toward this year. I think he's certainly paid the price for it. Is he that guy? Is he a fearful type defenseman? They need to get tougher and bigger back there. I think, honestly, Bean and Boqvist's challenge, more games are going to help them for sure. I think their biggest hurdle is the offseason. And just going from smaller guys, they're light. They are light players. And they sort of defend with their sticks and their feet. And you can only have so many guys like that on the back end. At some point, you got to have guys that can defend with their bodies as well. And so that's, to me, their challenge is in the offseason. And that's where, you know, that'll be hard to measure during the course of the season until the next season. But they've got to get bigger and they've got to get stronger, those guys, too, because they get pushed around a lot. I love Gavrikov long-term, Werenski long-term, for sure. I think there's a ton of promise with Boqvist and Bean. So much about their games to like. But I don't know if they don't both sort of physically mature and add that element to the game, I'm not sure you can keep both of them long-term like that, if that makes any sense. I think Peak's a top four guy. I do. And, you know, of course, some Kuhlemans is on the way. They've got other top-notch prospects that are probably – Kuhlemann's probably 3 years away. I think he spends a couple more years at Wisconsin. So that's sorting it out on the back end. It's really intriguing. We're going to learn a lot just watching these guys grow and see what they can accomplish.
Aaron, the one thing that I'm curious about, especially now that we're at this month in January, where it's kind of the grind and you normally get down toward the trade deadline, which is normally in February, but because of the way this year is going,
everything's
just, don't even know what day it is anymore. But three guys in particular, I'm really curious your take on. Jack Roslovic is one, Max Domi is another, and Patrick Laine. And I think that there's different elements with all three, but there's still certainly a level of question about their potential place on the team, or maybe they move on. Like, you know, in my mind, I think Domi would be hard pressed. Roslovic is even 50-50, and Laine is somebody that, you know, they'd love to keep him, but, you know, as of late, you know, I don't think he even had any shots the last game. Where do you sit with all three of those guys? Like, where do you feel could happen with them? And is there even any way that they consider Domi past this season?
Well, I think Domi's the easier one of the three. I think he's gone by the trade deadline. I don't think there's any doubt about that. I think that's where this is at. I mean, you hear talk about Boston. Is it DeBrusque for Domi trade? Does that make sense? These are two pretty good players. DeBrusque may just need a new start, new coach. I think Domi's gone. I think that's pretty clear. The Roslovic one is a little bit different. To me, he's maybe the biggest disappointment on the team this year. Not to get personal, but this is the situation he's waited for. I don't get the sense that playing at home is too overwhelming for him, but he could say that better than I, obviously. Yep. He's given a chance to play center ice. This team down the middle is there for the taking if you're an NHL center. He's got ice time here if he earns it. This would seem to be the ideal situation for him. Honestly, I thought Winnipeg was the ideal situation for him. And it kind of was a red flag that to me that he didn't feel that way. That's a great team when he was there at first. They've sort of leveled off a bit, but he played with some incredible players his first couple of years in Winnipeg and was in a great situation there. The Blue Jackets are giving him a chance to play center. I don't think he has absolutely grabbed it and overwhelmed them to the point where they feel like they know what they've got for the future. And so I think it's more likely than not that he is moved by the trade deadline as well. The really hard one for me is Line A. And I think Line A right now, he was not very good last night. Many people were not very good last night.
Right.
I'm just kind of waiting to see here if where he was, where he is as of last night, where he's been the last week or so. Is this a return to last season? Or is this a guy, and we were asking Brad Larson about this today. You know, you missed 2 months of the season, and he really didn't get a chance to skate very much during those 2 months, both with the injury and then going back home for his father's funeral.
Mm-hmm.
That's a long time to take off, and he played really well out of the gate coming back. Adrenaline, 100%.
Yep.
And I think it's catching up to him now. I also think we need to be careful, and you can ask the players this. They may not admit it, but you wonder what the long-term effects of COVID are.
Mm.
A lot of these guys are asymptomatic or barely symptomatic, or they just kind of don't feel great for a couple of days and they're back.
Yeah.
But I think some guys are having issues with lung capacity that maybe we're not fully aware of, or maybe they don't feel too comfortable talking about. They just want to play and play through it.
Yeah.
And I think that's at play with some of these guys too. But for me, for them, Line A is a really hard call. This is a 23-year-old. He's 23. It feels like, you said this about the defenseman, Boqvist. Yeah. It seems like, it feels like Line A should be 27 as long as you've been hearing his name, as many games as he's played. This is the kind of guy that when you get Sillinger, Johnson, Voronkov, Marchenko, you know, these guys up and running, these are the kind of difference makers that really separate teams, high-end scorers. Like, you could spend a long time looking for a player like that. I don't know where – they've got to figure out where – there's one more year of RFA, and then he's up to UFA status. So I don't think it's anything they've got to get too urgent with. But of the three, that's the harder call for me because he is a special – he is a special player. You saw it early. The first 2-3 weeks of the season, that's what Patrick Laine can be. And I think people in Columbus finally got an appreciation of this player that you'd never got that sense from last year. And you certainly wouldn't see it the last few weeks here.
We mentioned kind of some darker spots and players who haven't been performing kind of up to what was expected. Let's kind of look for a bright spot here. Who do you think to this point in the season has really stood out and kind of been the MVP for this team?
Boy, that's a good question. I mean, MVP, I think you think of, you know, Boone Jenner, probably MVP. He's on pace for 30 goals, which is that would be his second 30-goal season. Many would find that surprising. Mm-hmm. Bjorkstrand's tailed off for me. Elvis was strong early. He's tailed off. I think the bright stories, I don't think it's quite MVP caliber for the team, but Alexander Texier, those are the kind of stories you help to stumble upon in a season like this when you're paying your dues. The way that he's played, that is what they have said he could be And you started to see him play that sort of he's not an agitator or confrontational necessarily, but there's some sandpaper to his game. And he plays bigger. He just looks bigger now. He's been a real bright spot. I think you can look at him and say, bona fide top nine guy in the NHL, maybe top six. I think Andrew Peak has been certainly not MVP caliber, but I think you're seeing an NHL defenseman, which if you remember last year, and this never made sense to me, but he was a healthy scratch for long stretches last season when they were well out of it. Like, what are you doing? This is when the kid should be playing. So this is kind of his first regular hockey. And I think the way that he's played has been really, really impressive, especially they've asked him to take on a different role this year, like be a physical guy, not just a solid two-way guy. You got to be the guy that finishes checks. Well, you know, that's easy to talk about. And then you're on the ice with these big uglies that you're supposed to finish a check on, right? These guys that are a lot older than you and in a lot of cases bigger. This is not a fighter, Andrew Peak. He is not a fighter. All you got to do is look at his two fights to recognize not a fighter. But he's willing to do that. I hope he takes some lessons from Jared Bowler or Jody Shelley. I think those are two bright spots. The other thing, Cole Sillinger is not lighting it up, but this is an 18-year-old kid. God, I wish when I was 18, I was half as comported as this kid is. He's just so together with everything. But when you see him out late in a game with the Blue Jackets protecting a one-goal lead, youngest player in the league is out there protecting a league ahead of veteran players. That is a quiet moment, but a wow moment for me. And if you're looking for silver linings as a Blue Jackets fan, that's the kind of stuff you should be sort of taking note of and appreciating, I think.
Mm. Aaron Portsline from The Athletic joining us here on Union Junction. And one last player I want to ask you about, because he certainly seems to cause a divide on the Twitter spheres anymore.
Good.
Well, the real Emil Bemström, please stand up. Where are you at with him?
You know, maybe the real Emil Bemström has stood up. I'm beginning to wonder. It's kind of a sad tale to me, honestly, because I do think there's a lot more there. Mm. And this may be way out of bounds, but I see a player that is timid, as though he's afraid to let loose and be his full self at the NHL. Mm. And I don't know why that is. The one, I can't remember which game it was, but he was coming through the right circle. It was a 3-on-2. And somebody put the puck, nobody in front of him. Perfect pass in the right dot, off the rush. And the play just fluttered away, right off his stick. And you're like, that just feels like his career right there. Tough. Because that is his perfect, that is his shot.
Yep.
That is his shot. That is a golden opportunity. You don't get those chances in the NHL. There it is. And it just went off your stick without even a shot attempt. And if there is a mental block that does not allow him to relax and be himself, to trust that he's good enough and just play. Everybody has a level they get to where it just becomes too rich for them. Everybody does. Most of us sort it out when we leave our backyards. It gets too rich for us there. Most of us, that's where it happens. But some of these guys, it doesn't. I don't feel like he has ever fully been able to spread his wings and express himself. You thought maybe with a hat trick last year, it would. Can we just say this too? It wasn't John Tortorella. Because the big bad wolf Tortorella is gone now, and Emil Bemström is no different. Mm. I don't think he's any different. I hate to think of a super talented kid just not being able to let loose and be himself, because that would be a lifelong regret, I would think. I remember early this season thinking, when is Alexander Texier going to grab it? And how much longer can they wait? And then he grabbed it.
Yep.
And he took off, and he was their best before he got COVID and got sick. I thought he was their best forward, maybe their best player for 6 weeks. So I guess there's, you know, I wouldn't give up. Like, that's what this season is. I would be running that kid in the ground and waiting for him to figure out a way to get the light to click on. Make your decision after the season, but yeah, I mean, it's all in his court.
I just want to ask you about something before we get into our little rapid fire round here. Yeah. Somebody who you get to see a lot more up close than a lot of fans is Brad Larsen. What do you take from him this season? How does he compare to Torts, and moving forwards, like, do you think that he's here for the long haul?
Well, I mean, I think he's got a 3-year deal, I believe. So I certainly, and I've started to see this in social media, like, is he safe? Yeah, he is safe. I mean, come on. This season is this season. They knew what they were going into, and he may just be right for this job. I mean, they need a teacher. They need, I think Pascal Vincent, the associate coach, is a hell of a teacher too. I think he's going to help it. I mean, this team is hovering around 500. I think if they didn't have that great start and you just sort of woke up from a deep sleep and saw them at 500, you'd say, hey, pretty good. Nice going. I'm not sure there are guys that have a fear factor with him that they did with Tortorella. I think maybe there's more work for the captains here than there was under Tortorella, because Tortorella would not let anything pass. I think it's different. I think some guys are learning to operate under him when they got used to you weren't going to get away with anything under Tortorella, so there would be constant correction if it showed up on tape. I think there are guys still sort of getting used to how Larsen wants to coach and plans to leave the room. I think guys respect that he was a former player and a tough one. This is a growth experience for all of them. I don't know if he's the long-term fit here. I mean, most NHL coaches last, 3 years, 3.5 years? Maybe they go a different direction in a few years, which would be kind of unfortunate if you're the guy that does all the heavy lifting when they're, you know, when they're struggling, and then finally get to a point where they can take off and you go. I think Brad Larsen's done a fine job given the circumstances.
And before we get into the lightning round, the thing that we do here every week on this show, do you have one Twitter question that came in, I think is a very good question. Sure. And give credit to Mike Fink at Finks_thoughts. And he says, what goes into the process of voting for some of the awards as you, a member of the Professional Hockey Writers Association? He says, moreover, how does a voter value film, stats, and other factors when deciding between a couple of players that you might have to decide on your ballot?
Yeah. So the writers vote on the Hart Trophy. I'm going to forget some of these. The Hart, the Selke. We vote on a wide array of awards. The broadcasters do the Jack Adams. So it's kind of all over the place. And not everybody gets a vote every year in the PHWA. Mm-hmm. But they're doled out by chapter.
Yep.
So the chapter chair always gets a vote, but then they usually pick, depending upon how many each market gets. So what I've done is, and I try to watch hockey, but I also try to keep a marriage together. So I, on my off nights, I don't always sit down and watch every game, but you know, just, you cover the Blue Jackets, you're going to see every team throughout the course of the year, and you're paying attention to how teams play. You're catching a game here and there, late night game when the family's going to bed. But I'm fortunate enough to know scouts, to know management types, to know people around the game, former players even. And I don't let them vote for me, certainly, but I will call them and have a discussion with them and say, all right, who out West have you been really impressed with as a defensive forward this year? Here's what, and I don't tell them who I'm voting for, but I just like to have a conversation with them. Can't name anybody from your team, but who's really impressed you? And just have a variety of conversations from people I really trust, who I know aren't going to just float their own guys in there. And then you proceed. Like, and I also have a different way of looking at it. To me, the Hart Trophy is not the best, is not the MVP. Mm-hmm. It is the player who's most valuable to his team. So not the best player in the league necessarily. It can be the same guy. And I'll be, if I can go on a rant here,
sure.
I want a shirt that says, I stand with Hub Arkish. Because I don't know if you know, or what was the guy's name? Yeah, Hub Arkish. The dude from Chicago who caught all kinds of shit last week for saying he wasn't going to vote for Aaron Rodgers for the MVP. Now, do you remember this? He was absolutely blistered. I love his name, by the way.
I love the name.
It's just fun to say.
Yep.
He's an old school Chicago writer. And maybe, you know, you disagree with his thinking. Well, tough toodles. That's his vote.
Mm.
That is his vote. You don't have to agree with it. It's not Hub voting representative of everybody else out there. It's who he thinks is the MVP. Now, should he have announced it early? Was his thought process justified? That's a discussion to make. But, and I don't mind showing my ballot. All of our ballots are public. Mm-hmm. I try to pay attention, do the best I can. I don't talk to anybody else about who they're voting because I don't frankly care. But I spend a good day or at least a day's worth of work over a few days making phone calls, talking to scouts. Hey, I've always liked this Barkov kid. I think he's a hell of a defensive player. Do you see that too? And 3 years ago, people started saying, oh man, this kid is so good, even when he doesn't have the puck. So you just have conversations with that. Mm-hmm. I don't want to look at, this is nothing against anybody who does these, but I don't want to look at the midseason or the late season, our picks for the ballots. Like, don't give me that. I don't want my mind crowded with it. I want to make the decision based upon what I know and the sort of research and background scratching and digging that I've done. That's how I feel about it.
I'm sure. All right, let's hop into the rapid fire. That's all good, Mark?
Yeah, and just a real quick explanation, if you're new to the show, at the end of every show, we have a variety of questions. Nick's going to have a few. I'm going to have a few. We're all going to answer just impulse. They're going to be very short answer. And then we keep a tally throughout the course of the year to see who ends up with the most points. So right. That said, Nick, go for it.
All right, so we're going to start off. We're going to do our rapid-fire deadline decisions. Mm. I'm going to give you a player. You got to let me know if they're traded by the deadline. That's the key, by the deadline. Okay, Jonas Korpisalo.
Yes.
Definitely.
Jack Roslovic.
Yes.
I don't think so yet. I think they're going to wait.
Okay, Max Domi.
Yes.
Definitely.
And Patrick Laine?
No.
Okay. And quick rapid fire on who is one player that could be traded that maybe people is – it's not on their radar.
Oh, that is an interesting one.
Dean Kukin for me. He's a UFA. I think he goes by the deadline.
Yeah, that's fair. Sometimes Dean doesn't register with – with me. Yeah, boy, that's a hard one.
Shall we play the Jeopardy theme for you?
You know that, yeah, well, no doubt. Because you know there's going to be some tough ones. There's going to be some surprises in there, eh?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I'm not moving him. You know what? I think it's a year early. Because he's got 5.5 remaining after this year. But at some point, I think Gus Nyquist is going to move the ball.
Mm, that's true.
Interesting.
All right. Looking into the future, let's have a look into our magic mirror on the wall. 5 years from now, who is the Blue Jackets starting goaltender?
Danil Tarasov.
5 years from now?
Yeah. Still under contract.
I still say Merzlikins. At that point.
Okay. I'm leaning Tarasov on that one.
Okay.
Let's go. You guys have both watched the Blue Jackets for a long time. Who's your favorite Blue Jacket of all time?
Do I go first here as well?
Yeah.
If you like. You
popcorn in.
I mean, I've got a ton of them, but the guy I always come back to is Espen Knutson.
Yeah. That's a deep cut.
Yeah. Yeah. It's spectacular. I mean, on the ice, off the ice, spectacular.
Hmm. The easy guy to say is Nick Foligno, but for me, just thinking about just someone who was just always open and honest, I always enjoyed the Scott Hartnell talks.
Sure.
That's classic. I'm going with Vinny Prospel.
Hey,
short-lived, but he was a wild one. Okay, we're looking ahead this week. There's two games. How many wins do the Blue Jackets get?
We're talking Carolina, Florida?
Carolina and Florida. Both away games.
I say if they get a point, 1 point out of the possible four, it's been a good trip.
Okay, so we're going zero.
I'm saying 0-2. That's the two of the best teams in the league on the road. Maybe they pull a Jaguars over Colts, but we'll see. They have to play the games, I guess, right?
The question is Kodiak Black going to be at the game on Saturday?
Shout out to George Richards on that one.
Okay, so we mentioned Patrick Laine. We don't think he's going to be traded by the deadline. So let's look at the end of the season. Is he signed long-term, signed short-term, or traded?
I think it's another 1 year.
Yeah.
I think, and this is just personal opinion, I think they decide that the guys that are coming are eventually going to be good enough. And I think with two top 10 picks, along with a 23-year-old, I think they go to 4 years. That's my bold take of the night.
I'm going to say a 1 year deal again. Yeah. It short term depends on how the end of the season goes. If he starts lighting it up, I think they look long term.
Yes. If I can just real quick, I'm not sure that it's entirely up to them.
Oh, that's fair.
The player is at next year is 1 year from UFA status. That starts to become a rather delicious choice. You know?
Yeah.
Okay, and my last question is dealing with Seth Jones, Adam Boqvist. Who do you think ends the season with more goals? Because that's maybe we'll have a little more debate there. And 10 years from now, who do you think have been the better player?
Well, how many goals does Jones have right now?
I think he only has like three.
Yeah, so I'm not sure he gets to – I think Boqvist will have more goals this year.
I agree with that.
It's hard. I think Seth Jones is a generational defenseman. It's hard for me to imagine that Boqvist gets quite there. I think he can be a hell of a player. I think he's maybe more offensively gifted than Seth Jones is. Seth Jones just does so many. There's so many parts of his game, I think, that are unmeasurable. The gray areas there that. And he's the guy, the longer you watch, the more impressed you are by him, Seth Jones. But yeah, I think Jones will be regarded as having been the better defenseman. But if goals is the measure, I think Boqvist beats him there.
I agree with all that. I think Adam Boqvist is Erik Karlsson light is the comparison that comes to my mind for the offensive side of the game. So I've got two questions and then we'll wrap this up here. Is the number one center of the future currently in the Blue Jackets organization?
Oh, that's a good question. I mean, I think you're asking, is Kent Johnson a center? And the Blue Jackets think he is. Kent Johnson thinks he is. Who the hell am I to say he isn't? He hasn't played there yet. The idea that, well, he plays left wing in college, that means that's probably – I get that, but if you understand Michigan's roster, you understand why he would play somewhere other than center to get him up. I don't know if he's going to be a center. To be honest with you, his size and weight concerns me a little bit about NHL center play because that is a physically taxing two-way job that requires some muscle and girth, and he is a light player. But I'm not going to rule the kid out. I'm not going to say he can't do it until he gets there and can't do it. So, I don't think the number one center is currently on the roster. Is it in the organization? I think if I were a betting man, I would say probably not.
So we're saying Cole Sillinger's not?
I think Cole Sillinger is a hell of a two. I think he could be a one. Mm-hmm. I think you could do a lot worse than having him as your one. But I don't think he's a classic number one. Then again, there aren't 32 of them.
That's true.
There are probably 18 to 20 of them anyways. And most teams get by without that superstar number one guy. That's just the reality. You don't have to have that. I think this team is set up to be pretty damn good down the middle. I can't wait to see Voronkov get over here and start shoving people around. Because that kid is Boone Jenner with a touch more skill and a bigger frame. He's a big dude who plays his ass off, from what I understand. Jenner goes back to the wing. But so I think you've got the number two and the number three center filled probably in 2 years, Sillinger, Voronkov. And I think you've got to hope that the number one guy comes from the draft here this summer or next, because those guys don't move around.
Yep. Shane Wright, Connor Bedard, Logan Cooley. You can name a few names. If they can land one of them, that they need it. And the last lightning round question for the night here is, do the Blue Jackets acquire a third first round pick in the 22 draft as a result of actions at the deadline or by the draft?
I mean, that I find hard to believe. I don't. So Domi's a UFA.
Yep.
I don't, this is not trading Foligno and Savard. I don't think the teams that are feeling like they're one piece away are in the Domi market necessarily. So I think that might be hard to come by, to be honest with you. I think they should probably be happy with two. But stranger things, right?
Stranger things have always happened. Aaron, we want to give you a chance to kind of promote the work that you've been doing recently, most notably on The Athletic. You've had a great series of stuff with Kent Johnson and his diary, among other things. Just give the audience what's been going on with that.
Yeah, so Kent and I talk once a month. Stay in touch beyond that, but talk once a month. And he agreed to do this. He and his agent agreed to do this. At the start of the season, because this God, I kind of feel for the kid, because this is two world juniors that have been taken away. Now he got to this one again, and it never didn't get off the ground. He may get a chance to play in the Olympics this year, which would be pretty cool. He had COVID, he had a quarantine for 10 days in Ann Arbor, and then flew to Calgary and quarantined 5 days there. I mean, and then he starts to play and the thing gets bagged after like 2 days. I mean, unbelievable.
Yeah.
So then he goes back to Michigan. He hasn't played in like a month, and all he does is score like a goal and two assists, I think, right out of the hopper. So he's going to be in Columbus before the end of this season. It's when Michigan's season ends that he's likely to sign and come aboard. So yeah, there's been a lot of interesting things to talk about with him. And we've just sort of tried to set it up as like a diary of what this kid is going to. So Blue Jackets fans can follow the top prospect sort of throughout the season. And he's been a willing participant in that. So
really good fans. You already follow him, but if you're new, make sure you follow him at @aportsline on Twitter with The Athletic. Now with the subsidiary of the New York Times as a result of what has happened with The Athletic. Did you ever imagine Dave?
Mr. Portsline from now on, Mark. Mr. Portsline.
Mr. Portsline. There you go. Sorry for the confusion. No, but seriously, Mr. Portsline, thank you so, so much for taking the time to join us to talk all things Blue Jackets. We greatly appreciate it.
Well, thanks for having me, guys. I appreciate it. Y'all have a good night.
Yeah, you as well. Fans, thanks for joining us. Have a great night. We'll see you next week here on Union Junction. Take care.